are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Oh, it's on me, huh, Charlie? You putting that kind of shit on me? Huh?
It's on you.
Hey, welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. And depending on how far back you've gone, we want to talk to those of you who have been with us since Bulgarian Burst. And then we had the Serious Growth, Big Beyond Belief, Titan Training. And I'd like to introduce a new program that we have out because we just keep evolving as much as we can. We've been working on a new training program. We call it Silverback Training. This is the latest and the greatest that we've finally come up with. And we have, we've created a community on Facebook where all of you, not just the Silverback people, but all of you, because you've all at some point have purchased all of our training courses, which has been, you know, over, what, 30, 40 years now. I don't know. I can't do math. But it's been an evolution. And some of you guys have been there with us through the whole trip. So I just wanted to give some info that we have the new program, Silverback Training. It's for you. It's for us, because I'm in that group now, Silverbackers. And we have what's called the Silverback Inner Circle. You're going to get a lot of great information. We're going to be talking to each other, finding out what works and what doesn't work and how the program is working for them. So I'm looking forward to seeing you guys on that side. I'll be interacting with all you in a really big way. So welcome, welcome, welcome. And thank you for being some big supporters, man. It means a lot. Okay, well, one of the things I want to talk about today, and this kind of goes with us being around in the industry for this long. Anyway, for those of you who've been around, the topic and the theme for today is, and I've mentioned this before, the mark of a good program is that it's relevant and it stands the test of time. Let me tell you something, that means a lot, and it actually didn't mean as much to me 10 years ago or 15 years ago as it does now, because, you know, for anybody to stay in the industry as long as we have, you know, you have to do some stuff right. That's for damn sure. And this, look, it applies across the board to athletes, you know, in their sport. You know, when you start looking to see what the common denominator is with some of these people that hang around in the sport that they're in, it just doesn't happen, man. Because, you know, as you get up there in age, you can't train your body the same way, you know, when you're 50 years of age that you did when you were 25. Well, and I can tell you one thing. That's not a bad thing. That's just something that needs to be said and talked about. There's ways around it. I speak from firsthand experience. I always have. I don't like to tell you stuff that I haven't done over and over again. So by the time I get on air, by the time start producing training manuals, we've done a lot of time prior to that. It's not just we come up with it just off the cuff and then we, you know, say, oh, this will work. It doesn't work that way. We are in the lab, in the gym, which is our lab. We are in there for hours and hours making sure that when we come out with something, that it's going to work for you. And listen, the fact that we've been around, again, I'm repeating myself, that we've been around for so long tells you that we've done our homework. So I want to, you know, my presence now and how I can make myself useful is to keep passing on this information. It's new, but let me tell you something. A lot of the stuff that we do is grounded and based in you know, a foundation that is strong, and it's going to be strong even past the latest training course that we've produced. It'll continue on because we've got you're only as strong as your base and your foundation. You got to keep that in mind. Think about like when you're building a structure, you have to put a solid foundation in before you put the walls and the roof. Think about that for just a minute. I mean, it's common sense, but if you try to do that in any other order, you might have something that will be standing 4 or 5 years down the road, but will it be standing 15, 20, 30 years, forever down the road? I think not. Okay, so a couple things I just want to talk about today that's on my mind is that the masses are generally wrong. And I want to talk about this. And what this does, it takes me back to Bulgaria, 1982. And what I mean by the masses being wrong is when we came out with that training course, we had, for those of you who have the book, we actually had people training three times a day. I talked about this on another show. So we had people training three times a day. And let me tell you something. We had so many people that came out. I mean, you know, Jay Abraham, which is our marketing guy, once told us, he said, if you really want to have something that is that makes people get off the fence, do something that is like in the Bulgarian, the big Bulgarian Bulgarian Burst program, is write something that works, but get them off the fence. And that's exactly what we did. But what happened in that scenario, so a lot of people came out. I have to be honest with you. A lot of people came out, and one of the common things they talked about was it, with that program, is they said there's no way that you can train three times a day without overtraining. And I don't know that it was the masses that were talking about that, because that was one of our big hits right off the bat. But we had a lot of people that were questioning the fact that you could train three times a day without overtraining. The people that were commenting on that, and this is not unusual in any, you know, line of work, in anything that you do, you'll always have the naysayers. And some of that is important because that's part of a check and balance. But when people were talking and saying that you can't do this program without overtraining, or, you know, you're going to get hurt, those were the people that weren't really digging down and understanding that this was based in science. It not only that, it was also based in the trenches in that lab that we were talking about. It was based in physiology. You know, we just didn't put that stuff out there without really digging in and making sure that we had, a solid foundation. But this is not unusual. The masses are generally wrong. I mean, think about the Wright brothers. You know, they were... for goodness sake, no one thought that anybody could create a machine that could fly, you know. So how it was apparent there that the masses were wrong. And that's just one example. Before we go any further, Charlie, I wanted to introduce Charlie, my man, Charlie. You know, you guys don't see him, but I have to tell you something. I hate to admit it, but this program doesn't go unless Charlie's here. If I try to set this shit up, we'd go nowhere. I don't even know if I could get a voice on. So, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Hey.
You're the big guy. And Charlie is also here not only for if something goes haywire. So, he's part of our tech. Or what are you, IT? Tech?
Tech.
Tech. I want to make sure I get the right title for you, for fuck's sake. But also, Charlie is here. He's here listening and paying attention to the program as well, because he might be asking, like, certain questions to me. And, you know, based on maybe the questions that some of you might be asking. So just so you know, Charlie's here for those two reasons. So, Charlie, thank you for being here. Okay, so the masses are wrong. We know that. And I gave you a couple of examples. And I'll give you something else where the masses were wrong. And I learned a lot of this stuff, man, you know, in Bulgaria. And that was, what, 82? And listen, Bulgaria is one of those programs that stood the test of time. Everything that I learned when I was back there, everything that I learned is still relevant to this day. And yet, when I came back with some of this information that we're talking about, they told me when I came back to the States, they said, you're 8 years ahead of anything that is in application and tested form. So be prepared for that. Can you imagine that? In 1982, you're talking about a country that, compared to ours, is you know, I'm not going to say it was a third world country, but in many ways, they're 50 years behind. For example, in the way telephones worked over there. I saw that and experienced that firsthand. So for the information that they gave me as it relates to training and nutrition, the stuff that they gave me in how long is that in 82? Is that 35 years? What's the math, Charlie? Can you do math?
You're going on 40 years.
40 years? Fuck. I didn't know you were that old. 40 years, man. 40.
Going on.
Okay, princess.
Not there yet.
Okay. Don't blink. Shit goes back. Anyway, so 40 years ago, this stuff is still relevant, okay? The three times a day. There was no way they said, look, if you only train 20 to 45 minutes, it's virtually impossible to overtrain the physiology. They knew that already 40 years ago. No one here in the West knew that. In theory, we were talking about, well, in theory, you're going to overtrain. And this is where you got some of the boo birds out there that were, you know, talking some shit because they didn't know how far in advance that the Bulgarians really were, which is remarkable considering, like I told you, I couldn't make a fucking phone call from there, a long distance phone call. I'd have to wait an hour to make a call. It's bullshit. You know, when you consider the fact that the time difference is like, I don't know, 8-9 hours difference. That's fucking bullshit. You got to get up in the middle of the night or whatever it was. It was very inconvenient. But, I mean, the point is this. You know, how could they be so far ahead of everybody else? Well, I'll tell you why. Because they were of the mindset that you go into the gym, you state the goal, and in their case, the goal was to be the strongest men in the world. It didn't matter that they weren't big in bodybuilding back then, because they weren't. But they said, and I asked them that. I said, why aren't you in that field, you know? You're the strongest man in the world in only 9 years. You've overtaken the number one spot in Olympic lifting. And they said, it doesn't matter because all you have to do is state the goal. What is it that you're trying to do? Well, all right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
For me, I was there to try to learn how to pack on as much muscle as humanly possible. You know, so I guess if you had the critics out there, you know, the boo birds, well, they could say, well, yeah, these guys were, you know, they were number one in Olympic lifting, but that's a far cry from, you know, bodybuilding and adding on muscle as fast as humanly possible. That is an incorrect fucking statement because, again, I addressed that with them, and they said, all we have to do is change and to find out what it is that you're trying to do, in this case, put on muscle, and it was real easy. It was about doing volume training in the fucking story. And that goes to also, there's always this debate in our country, maybe in more than our country, but there's this debate. Well, what's the best way to put on mass as fast as humanly possible? Is it to lift more weight? Or is it do more or lighter weight and more volume? To this day, you'll get just as many people saying that lifting heavy weight is the best way to put on muscle. Absolutely incorrect. Is it a part of it? Yes, it's a secondary benefit. We've talked about this before, but it's worth talking about it again and again and again. Because the truth of the matter is, I've been very fortunate to be around long enough to where I've always questioned things. I question everything. It's a part of my serious growth mindset, and I question everything. And I learned way back when that the guys that were down in Venice Beach, the mecca of bodybuilding, even though guys like Dorian Yates and guys like Mike Mincer were professing heavy duty, and I think Dorian was HIIT training, they appeared that they were doing very low rep training. In fact, you would think that in Mincer's case, there was no volume being done. But when you take a look at and I did because I went down there and I lived down there and I trained at Gold's Gym back in those great days. By the way, it's a fucking mess now down there at Gold's Gym. It's horrible. The atmosphere, unbelievable. Anyway, some of the gods that went through there are rolling over in their fucking grave more than one time. But you know, I went down there and I had to learn this shit for myself to see what these guys were actually doing. I didn't make it obvious that I was doing that. I was kind of behind the scenes, you know, training there and doing cardio. And I can tell you this, those guys, their training routines were more based in volume than it was in lifting a lot of weight. And that's the truth. And we need more of that. Again, the masses thinking that lifting more weight is a better way to put on muscle, you're not absolutely wrong, but you're mostly wrong. Because when you lift weight for that's heavy, the number one objective and the number one result that you get from that is getting stronger. Secondary benefit is adding on muscle. So the same thing happens when you're doing more volume. Now, what does volume mean? That's in one case, it's doing just, you know, to make it simple, anything above 6 reps and all the way up to 100 reps, thanks to Tom Platz, is volume. And that, so that is anything less than that, 5 reps, because generally the old trainers that were back in the day before they knew about how training really impacted athletes, it was real simple. For strength, you did 5 sets of 5. I mean, that was kind of a general. We're talking sort of in general terms here in a way. But again, the masses were wrong about, you know, what was the best way to add on as much muscle as humanly possible. Another thing where most people are wrong, it's very controversial, is stretching. Stretching is a waste of energy. And I know saying that's going to probably, you know, some people have a nervous breakdown over that. What do you mean stretching is a waste of energy? Well, what the Bulgarians taught me 40 fucking years ago, what they taught me was that you teach your body what you want it to do. If you teach it that it needs to stretch, then you're going to have to stretch before you actually get into what we call the working set. And that's exactly what everybody was doing. They weren't questioning that. You got to question stuff. Even if you're wrong about in the way you're questioning things, but question it until you are 100% convinced and you can prove it to yourself based on firsthand experience as well as physiology and science and all that, before you'd come to that conclusion. That's where the Bulgarians were, and that's where we were. So some people say, okay, so what about getting all two things? One is injury I'll address, but then the other is, you know, what? Aren't you going to get all bound up if you don't stretch? Absolutely not. Listen, if you train in full ranges of motion, you're not going to get bound up. I mean, think about it. You're doing a full range of motion. That's how your body operates, in full ranges of motion. So you don't, just because you lift weights doesn't mean that you're going to get bound up. Now, if you're a bodybuilder, you can't hardly help but getting bound up because you put so much fucking muscle on, for example, in the bicep, that when you go to, you know, try to, for example, if you're a bodybuilder trying to do an Olympic lift where you're holding a bar like a front squat, it's very difficult to hold the bar up there when you've got so much muscle mass. Okay, that is, some people might say that's being bound up, but that's just not being specific to what the goal is. If you want to be an Olympic lifter, for fuck's sake, you don't put on that kind of muscle. You can still add muscle to your body, but tone it down right there because you want to be flexible there. That applies across the board. See, that is, when people are talking about that, they're not paying attention to being very specific and thinking in terms of to the nth degree. What is your stated goal? Okay, so stretching is not necessary. What about when you're injured? Well, we do what's called active recovery. Now, listen, if you have torn a muscle from the bone, obviously you might want to go easy on that. You might want to stretch that, get a little, you know, a warm-up, if you will. I call it active recovery. And active recovery simply is doing the same exercise as long as you don't have anything torn off the bone. If it's pulled, doing the same exercise, but just really cutting down the repetitions. Really light if you have to, because here's what happens. If you want to heal faster, you'd never want to stop working out. Again, I want to make sure that you understand, if you have a bone, if you pull the muscle off the bone, okay, that's the exception to the rule. Aside from that, when you do lightweight training, which is active recovery, here's what happens physiologically. Your body, it produces red blood cells and oxygen. Those two things are natural healers to the muscle. So if you want to recover faster, you don't stop training and wait for everything to get better. You help the the cause by doing active recovery. Okay, so if you're injured, that's how you handle that shit. Not stop. It's ridiculous. And as far as, and again, I'm speaking to you from firsthand experience. When I first went over to Bulgaria, when I heard that stretching was a waste of time, I thought they were out of their fucking minds because we were used to doing that. And in this case, I'm talking about not only stretching, but doing a bunch of warm-up sets before we actually got into the working set. And listen, you have to be willing to entertain the idea of making changes. It was very difficult for me to hear that from the Bulgarians, thinking, look, these guys are in a country in so many ways. Again, this is a stupid American and someone who's talking that doesn't have really the experience. You know, I didn't know that then because I was young and dumb, so to speak. And I just thought, well, they're out of their fucking minds to think that you shouldn't be doing some warm-up sets. But here's what I did to make it fair, to make my own conclusion. I came back home from that trip, and I thought, I'm just going to do this myself. Because what they learn is by stretching and warming up, you actually expose yourself potentially to more injuries, to more overtraining. Okay? Hard to understand that concept unless you really understand physiology, unless you really go into the gym and do it yourself. Learn for yourself. Don't always just take what people are saying, especially now with social media, and think that it must be true because it's on the internet. It's bullshit. I'm not saying that some things aren't, but I would venture to say that most things aren't because they lack experience and firsthand knowledge. So what I did, I came back from Bulgaria. I changed and I followed exactly what they said to do. They said, look, you know, because your body is very adaptive, don't all of a sudden go from warming up to, you know, going to your first working set from day one. That's stupid. Okay, you have to understand how the physiology works. It needs time to adapt to its new environment. And so I did that. And I'm going to tell you something. Those fuckers were right. You know, I remember my buddy, my partner, Dr. Horine, who wrote the books. We wrote the books together. I remember us testing to us, it was theory. To them, it was already application. The Bulgarians, what I mean. We did this, and we actually tested what they said. And we were training together in his garage there in his condo back then when we were doing all this stuff. And lo and behold, we could actually, Dr. Horan and I could actually at some point, because again, it took a little bit of time because your body adapts to a new environment after you're doing a routine. It starts adapting within 21 days. So as we got into that, you can count your last dime on this, that we would go into gyms and we'd blow some people's minds away. We'd actually walk in and the first set that we did, for example, with a bench press was 315. And for those of you who have trained, 315 is pretty damn good as a first set. We would go in there and I'm telling you, just like what the Bulgarians did when they were competing in the Olympics, they spun their opponents' heads around when they would just walk up to a weight that was usually... you know, you get three lifts. They would usually go up on and do their first lift. They were this strong while everybody else had done all three of their lifts. They were that strong. And they didn't warm up. They went up to the bar. They didn't go up there and yell at the bar and get all psyched up. They didn't do that. They just walked up to that bar and lifted it up over their head like it was nothing. Dr. Horine and I would do the same damn thing when we were training in these various gyms. I remember, I don't know if Dr. Horine remembers this. I'm sure he does. We were in Fresno, California. And we were doing a video, and we did that. And people were just looking at this like we were fucking crazy. These guys are going to do their first set with 315 pounds? Yes, we did. And come to find out, and like the Bulgarian said, you actually expose yourself to less injuries when you teach your body how to be ready on demand. That's the first set. And if you do get hurt, because it's a part of the game, you can't think that you're going to be going into a sport, any kind of sport, and never get hurt. It's part of the sort of the downside of any sport is as an athlete, you will get hurt. But the exposure, because we didn't do any extra stretching, so many people stretch wrong. They stretch before a workout. That's wrong when you're stretching cold. There's just a lot of reasons why you shouldn't do that. Anyway. That's it on stretching being a waste of energy. of course, what I've just talked about is the body becoming its function. See, your body does something. It's innate. This is what it does out of what you're doing along in your life. If you're creating a life that is full of, for example, full of stress, your body will try to adapt to that environment. Weight training is a temporary stress to your physiology. In many ways, it's stress. If you are overtraining, if you're training 2-3 hours in the gym, like so many people did and still do to this day, then your body at some point has to shut down because it can't keep up with that. You're chronically stressing it, and the body becomes its function. So what it does, if you train it right, we had the Bulgarians use this analogy back then. They said, how do you know when you're training or overtraining? And they told me, I asked that question, and they said, rub your hands together. When you rub your hands together back and forth, just right, the way that your body adapts to the environment, the body becoming its function, in other words, is that your body will adapt by, it'll start producing calluses on your hands. Now, the way that you know that you're overtraining is if you rub your hands together very fast for too long, then you get blister. The blisters that you get is the same thing as overtraining. So the body becomes its function. So you have to pay attention to that, because training is very, listen, your body is constantly in flux when you're in the gym. When you get really good at training in bodybuilding, you know that there are times that you go in that you can do an extra set or two, that you can do an extra reps, because you're listening to your body. You know that your body is becoming its function. You're really in tune with that. But how can you be in tune with that unless you spend hours and hours in the gym? High-level bodybuilders know that. They're very instinctive because they have the reference is all the experience that they've had inside the gym. So for those of you that are out there, don't think that this shit comes easy. You have to learn the hard way. It's a long process, and this is part of the reason why so many people just really don't make it, because, you know, it's a marathon, and you think about going into the gym day in and day out and putting yourself in fire, because that's what you have to do. You're beating your body up. It's not for the sane or for the weak-hearted by any means, but when you get to that point, you've earned your fucking stripes. You've failed to the point, you have to fail a lot to be successful, in other words. And if you're not willing to do that, you're not going to really understand the things that you're doing right and wrong. And the other thing is this, look, if you want to continue to make progress in your in whatever you're doing, it could be bodybuilding, it could be creating a training regimen that for endurance or just to be healthy. Look, the one thing that applies is this. You have to continue to be willing to make changes. You have to be willing to be open to the idea that you need a change in order to keep yourself relevant. This is what we were talking about at the top of the show about the mark of a good program is someone who's still around, you know? And I'm proud to say that I started at the age of 27 when I got into this first bodybuilding shows around then. And here I am, 65. I'm going to be 66 here, Charlie, May 18th. That's some serious-ass shit. I got to tell you something. If you don't think of it, don't look at me that way. Like, you young people are thinking, yeah, you'll see. You'll see, fucker. You'll see how it feels at 66. Do you feel young at your age? You're like 30-something.
On May 1st, I turned 32.
Yeah, yeah. How do you feel at 32, Charlie?
A good 84.
A good 84. Okay, you're ahead of me. So you already know what it feels like. Well, look, then add to this, in those years like I have, I've been lifting weights my whole time. My whole fucking time. I mean, you know, come on now. But on all seriousness, you know, I'm lucky. I'm still around. I feel pretty damn good, pretty damn decent, probably better than I should. That's not a famous last word. That's just an observation. Because seriously, no. Sometimes I feel so fucking good. I'm like, oh, is a shoe going to drop? We talked about this before. Anyway, hey, look, that's my, you know. Oh, one more thing. Let's just talk about this. It goes back to the Bulgarian verse. One of the things that the Bulgarians taught us and they were, you know, mentioning was that the more you stimulate the muscle, and this is the reason why we created that Bulgarian burst doing three times a day. Again, it was to the average person, it was an unfriendly training course because of the fact that you had to put in. I mean, think about that, Charlie, going into the gym three times a day, you know, early morning. So, you know, most of us have to work noon when most of us want to eat. And then at night, of course, you know, it was a huge commitment. But the reason why we wrote that like this, because the Bulgarian said, look, if you want to get more results, you want to train the muscle more frequently. The key is to not overtrain. And that's the reason why they said, if you train only 25 to 45 minutes, you won't overtrain the system. But can you see the commitment that you have to make to get that kind of result? But the truth is this, if you want to put on more muscle, if you want to get stronger, more frequency is the key. The Bulgarians used to do 50 to 65 one rep maxes every fucking time they trained. Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you are definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian power burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Now, can you imagine, think about the body becoming its function, and think about how that became so automatic to that physiology. Now you can understand why they were able to, as athletes, to go up on that stage and just walk up. The actual competition was the easy part. Can you see that? Because they every day, day in, day out, same thing happens in the Bulgarian burst and what we're doing on that level. Of course, you know, when we wrote the other training courses, we made it a little more user-friendly. We had some where you split and did two workouts a day. You know, that's the next best thing, and that was still the most effective way to train, and, you know, even to this day. So, again, it's about adapting and being willing to go through change. And, of course, we know as humans, change is one of the hardest things to do, no matter what. Anyway, look, I'm sweating my ass off in here, Charlie.
I got a question for you real fast.
Okay, Charlie has a question.
Because I've heard this back and forth, and you just said a lot of things change. When is cardio best, before workout or after?
It depends on what the stated goal is, and that's a very damn good question. So I'll give an example. When you're getting ready for a competition, a bodybuilding show, okay, the emphasis at that point is to maintain as much muscle as you can, but the emphasis is to start burning body fat because for a bodybuilder, we want to show all the muscle groups. So that's the most important thing. Your body, even though it can do two things at once, but when it does two things at once, it compromises both things instead of doing one thing at once. You see what I mean? So it's never very smart, especially as a bodybuilder, to be going into a show where you're having to try to put on muscle and lose body fat at the same time. Now, maybe I'm making, now make sense now. So if I'm in the off season, the emphasis is to put on muscle, okay? So I'm going to do my cardio after the weight training workout, okay? And getting ready for a show, it would be smarter to do actually the cardio before the workout because the stated goal is to burn body fat and maintain the muscle that you've already got. In your off season, you put on the amount of mass that you needed. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep the mass and now start thinking about getting rid of the body fat around that mass. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you're pre-contesting, just to keep it simple, when you're pre-contesting, you know, you do cardio first. If sometimes we were behind when we were like, there were a couple times where I got too fat in the off season. I actually had to do two sessions. I do one session in the morning and a session at night, after the workout. But I was doing that because I was behind in my schedule to get ready for that show. Yeah, that makes sense? Yeah. And the same thing happens like when people come in, like the more the average person that comes in for, they just want to get, you know, more toned up. If they come in, I just was talking to Kara today about a guy that's actually asked this question. He came in and he wants to lose. Here's what you hear a lot of times with people. Well, I want to lose fat and I want to put on muscle and I want to get this and I want to get that. And that's good. But tell me what you want more.
Yeah.
Mostly. You know, it's sometimes it's a struggle because you want to put both those things on. And in this guy's case, he was carrying too much body fat. And he's right now at the point where he just needs to get a little more body fat off. But he, you know, when you're taking losing body fat, and this is natural and normal, you can't get away from not losing muscle weight. When you're dropping down, losing weight, no matter what, your body is going to shed a little bit of lean weight. Muscle weight is a part of its fight or flight nervous system. It thinks that you're starving, so it's trying to hold on to some fat, and it'll sacrifice lean weight. And the way you get around that is making sure that your protein is just such. You're not doing too much cardio, because the more cardio, you would think that, if 30 minutes is good, an hour would be better. But the truth is when you're doing that hour, you will lose more body fat, but you're also losing more lean weight. Sort of the general rule of thumb there is for every 1 pound or every 3 pounds that you lose, you're going to drop 1 pound of muscle weight. And that's if you're doing everything right.
I have a lot of friends that used to skate.
Yeah.
But they got into working out, so they stopped because they said they would lose too much.
Right.
But if you're overweight, not a lot, but just overweight,
yeah,
should you just not do cardio then? Should you just work out to build muscle?
No.
No,
not necessarily. I mean, let me ask you this way. Are you a better skater if you're leaner?
Yeah.
You just answered the question. Yeah. See what I mean? Uh-huh. And that doesn't mean that you don't, you know, it's a combination. It's a balance between the training. Because I wouldn't, if I was training you to be a skater, all I have to do is look at the bodies of skaters. Okay, the body becomes dysfunction.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And I would say you need to be wiry, strong. In skating, you need to be strong in your core. You need to be trained in a certain way. So I would train you, but I would also be very conscious about you being in good shape. So when you're in good shape, you're not carrying extra body fat. You are 100% in tune with your body. When you have this fat that's hanging off your body, you're not really, you're kind of like two organisms moving around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not one. You want to be one. Especially when you're athletic, and skaters are athletes. I mean, some of the stuff that they do and the way they jump off walls, I'm amazed at what you guys do, you know, skaters. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, that did.
What else you got for us, Charlie?
That's it for today.
That's it for today, baby. All right, listen, I hope you guys enjoyed the program, and I hope you guys don't mind me ranting. Oh, hell, fuck it. I don't care if you mind. I'm going to rant anyway, but I hope I gave you some stuff that you can use as info. And I think, Charlie, maybe you got some out of this for skaters down the road.
There we go.
There we go, baby. All right. I guess until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.